This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. My guest, Natalie Diaz, grew up in an Indian reservation in California, and while many of those around her were struggling with a lack of opportunities, she saw basketball as her way out. Indeed, basketball got her through college. Playing professionally allowed her to travel all through Europe and Asia. And basketball taught her poetry as well. Natalie Diaz's first collection of poems is called When My Brother Was an Aztec, and she will be reading tonight at 7:30 at Caldwell Hall Lounge on the campus of North Carolina State University. This is April, National Poetry Month, so quite appropriate that you are here at NC State reading in that fine MFA program as part of that, and so wonderful to have you here, Natalie Diaz, on The State of Things. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Frank. I'm glad to be here.
Tell us about the title poem, When My Brother Was an Aztec.
Well, an interesting thing is one of my little brothers is actually on the cover of the book. So he's the gentleman you see there on the cover, dressed as our version of a kind of a tongue-in-cheek Aztec. Mm-hmm. But for me, the imagery that has been associated with the Aztecs and things that we've seen from the outside as being brutal or violent, whereas we know that from the inside, that was simply the way they lived and the way they made sense of their world. And so I think it was that dichotomy and that imagery that drew me to trying to use the Aztec as a way to make sense maybe of some of the things my brother, who in real life is a drug addict, has affected my family. So that was kind of the core pulse of using that.
Those kinds of perspectives, the idea of trying to understand what it would be to experience Aztec culture as an Aztec, not as a culture, right, is something that you had to obviously navigate, I would think. You grew up on the reservation. Were you thinking at the time of sort of trying to understand your experience the way a poet would and render it the way a poet would? When did those kind of two worlds come alive to you?
Well, I think I was lucky in the sense that I've experienced that from day one, at least two cultures under the same roof, my mother being Native and my father being Spanish. My grandparents are from Spain. And so, you know, my father always jokes and says that, well, you know, your mother is Native, I'm Spanish, so you're all Mexicans, you know. And so just kind of that blend, that always blending. Right. And also being able to hold both truths at one time. You know, we never had to choose between our Native way of thinking and our values over our, you know, Spanish Catholic, you know, values and ways of thinking. It was just both truths that we were able to kind of embrace and do what we needed to do with those, you know.
And yet there's something about living on the reservation, I would think, and I'm thinking about a poem like Why I Hate Raisins, for instance, that does push you in one direction in terms of creating an identity. There's something about that culture and living there that gives you a sense of who you are, whether you want it or not, I guess.
Yeah. You know, I think I joke about this as well and say that every Native or every Indian needs to write a commodity poem, because we make so many jokes from the inside of our community. We say, oh, you have a Kamad bod, you know, or there are T-shirts you'll see that say bod by Kamad, because the food was really awful that the government was giving, you know, big layers of fat over the meat and things like that. And so I think poems that come out like this are again, ways of just dealing with and showing a little bit of truth on both sides. Like, I definitely want a reader who has not been to my reservation or had commodities to understand some of that. But at the same time, it's important for me that people from my community can read that poem and recognize their own experience in it. So that, I think, is maybe where I start to juggle more than one identity, or the inside and outside of it. And poetry just happens to be the way I express that.
And very clearly not the only thing that you're interested in and the only expression that is interesting to you. And we come back to the title poem, When My Brother Was an Aztec. Some deep emotions here that have to do with family and obviously your brother and his struggle. Can I get you to read an edited version of that? We kind of edited it for time here. But if you would read that, we'd love it.
Of course. when my brother was an Aztec. He lived in our basement and sacrificed my parents every morning. It was awful, unforgivable, but they kept coming back for more. They loved him, was all they could say. It started with him stumbling along La Avenida de los Muertos, my parents walking behind like effigies in a procession he might burn to the ground at any moment. They didn't know what else to do except be there to pick him up when he died. They forgot who was dying, who was already dead. My brother quit wearing shirts when a carnival of dirty-breasted women made him their leader, following him up and down the stairs. They were acrobats, moving, twitching like snakes. They fed him crushed diamonds and fire. He gobbled the gifts. My parents begged him to pluck their eyes out. He thought he was Huitzilopochtli, a god, half man, half hummingbird. My parents at his feet wrecked honeysuckles. He lowered his sword-like mouth, gorged on them, draining color until their eyebrows whitened. Like all bad kings, my brother wore a crown, a green baseball cap turned backwards, with a Mexican flag embroidered on it. When he wore it in the front yard, which he treated like his personal zócalo, all his realm knew he had the power that day, had all the jewels a king could eat or smoke or shoot. The slave girls came to the fence and ate out of his hands. He fed them mice through the chain links. My parents watched from the window, crying over their house turned zoo, their son, who was now a rusted cage. The Aztec held court in a saltcedar grove across the street where peacocks lived. My parents crossed fingers so he'd never come back, lit novena candles so he would. He always came home with turquoise and jade feathers and stinking of peacock crap. My parents gathered what he'd left of their bodies, trying to stand without legs, trying to defend his blows with missing arms, searching for their fingers to pray, to climb out of whatever dark belly my brother, the Aztec, their son, had fed them to.
Natalie Diaz reading an edited version of When My Brother Was Aztec. She's going to be reading again tonight at 7:30 at the Caldwell Hall Lounge at North Carolina State. It's a beautiful poem. It's a powerful poem. And when you think about your brother and your parents, this is something you talked about earlier, trying to see things from each perspective and bring it together. So going back and forth between which my parents crossed their fingers so he'd never come back and lit novena candles so he would.
Yeah, I think, and again, this is why the Aztec imagery, you know, I think spoke to me or became another way of questioning this, you know, because I realize that as a sister, I have a certain luxury even of dealing with my brother. I can't imagine what a parent is going through, what my parents are going through, because I see that. I see that, you know, where they want to push him to say, okay, and we've had enough, you know, we can't take anymore. But he's also their son, and so they're really willing to take whatever he has to give. Or they're trying to, you know, give him the last ultimatum because they want him to be different. They don't want him to keep doing these things. But then when the ultimatum doesn't work, they're willing to give him another try. And so I think it was, again, that that kind of paradox of, yes, we see the brutality of it. We see the violence of it, which we'll never make sense of. But at the same time, there's a certain way of life and a certain belief system that keeps happening, you know, that makes us just keep moving forward through it. And yeah, it is difficult. And this was actually the first poem that I wrote that I felt like was able to start asking some of the questions that were in me about this topic. So
did they answer any of those questions for you?
No, but that's actually one of the things that draws me to poetry, I think, is that I don't expect an answer from it. And so poetry somehow makes it okay to simply ask the question. You know, this poem about my brother's addiction and my parents dealing with it, I don't know there's nothing that's going to make it better, but simply being able to write it out there and say, listen, I don't know why this awful thing is happening. There's still some sort of, I think, power or salve in that eases things a little bit.
And you bring in so many of sort of universal aspects and then deeply personal and cultural that all blend beautifully so that we can see how these things play together. Even if they don't give us answers, they loved him was all they could say. This universal sense of whatever that might be. And yet these very, very, particular issues, some of them religious, they begged him to pluck their eyes out. I don't know if that was a direct reference to scripture when they say if the thing troubles you, pluck it out. If your eye gives you trouble, pluck it out. That's a Christian religious reference. And then there are also native religious references and then cultural references like the baseball cap and the Mexican flag, all of them weaving together in this kind of beautiful, I wouldn't even call it tapestry, but image of the complexity of that story.
Yeah, thank you. And again, I think that just simply comes with growing up in the household that I grew up in. You know, we have a crucifix, on the wall in every room, yet we'll go to a Mojave cremation, and so we were, those things existed. And I think just even in the area where I live, it's a different kind of religion that we have out in this desert. You know, it's a religion of survival, I think. And so it allows you to go wherever you need to go and to touch the things you need to touch in order to keep moving forward.
Can I get you to read Reservation Mary for us?
Yes. Reservation Mary. Mary Lambert was born at the Indian Hospital on the Rez. She never missed a three-pointer in the first 13 years of her life. She started smoking pot in seventh grade, still never missed a three-pointer, but eventually missed most of her freshman classes and finally dropped out of high school. A year or so later, a smooth-faced Mojave who had a jump shot smoother than a silver can of commodity shortening and soared for rebounds like he was made of red-tailed hawk feathers visited her res for a money tournament. His team won the money, and he won MVI, Most Valuable Indian. Afterward, at the little bar on the corner of Indian Route 1, where the only people not allowed to drink were dialysis patients, he told Mary she was his favorite, his first string, that he'd dropped all those buckets for her. He spent his entire cut of the tournament winnings on her wild turkey and cokes, told her he was going to stay the night with her, even though it was already morning when they stumbled from the bar. He stayed and stayed and stayed, then left. Her heart felt pierced with spears and arrows, and her belly swelled round as an August melon. That was a lifetime ago. Now she's 17. She kept the baby and the weight, and sells famous fry bread and breakfast burritos at tribal entities on paydays, tortillas round and chewy as communion wafers, embracing Kamad cheese and government potatoes, delivered in tinfoil from the trunk of an old brown Buick with a cracked windshield and a pair of baby Jordan shoes hanging from the rearview mirror. Her sleeping brown baby tied tightly into a cradle board in the back seat. Just the other day, at a party on First Beach, someone asked if she still had that three-point touch, if she wished she still played ball, and she answered that she wished a lot of things, but what she wished for most at that minute was that she could turn the entire Colorado River into E&J Ripple. She went on a beer run instead, and as she made her way over the bumpy back roads along the river, that smooth-faced baby in the back seat cried out for something.
Natalie Diaz reading Reservation Mary from her collection When My Brother Was an Aztec. Natalie reads tonight at NC State Caldwell Hall Lounge at 7:30. You played professional basketball.
Yeah, I did. I was lucky. I actually played college ball not far from here at Old Dominion University. And then after I graduated, I went overseas and I played in Europe and Asia. For
Wolfpack, I think, beat you in a tournament.
Yes, they did. I still remember Dayton, Ohio, and I believe I had the last second shot that was not a three-pointer, which means we lost. So,
well, it's a memory anyway. And you have said that actually playing basketball informs your poetry. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it informs my poetry, and I think it also gives me a kind of freedom from the world of poetry that helps me keep things, I think, in perspective. I mean, for me, writing is a very physical process, and it's so like basketball. You know, when I write, I sweat. I like to listen to music. I kind of bop around in certain rhythms, and my writing for me is very texture based. Like words to me, I feel like I can kind of feel them. I can feel what they're made of. I like to feel them in my mouth and to know what they sound like in my ear. And to me, that's very much like basketball. You know, there's nothing I think that replaces that that experience of bouncing a ball, and you kind of feel it. You feel it brush off your fingertips, but you're also hearing it at the same time, and that kind of hollow echoing that you're hearing, you know, from the floor to the ball, from the floor. And so for me, that's how words work as well. I was lucky enough to be able to find that next thing in my life. Like, it started as basketball, but, it moved into writing. And so, you know, basketball helped me, I think, deal with a lot of things that I saw happen or that were happening around me. And now writing, you know, has taken the place of that. And I think also I write a lot like I played. Basketball is a very fast-paced kind of run-and-gun game on the reservation. And sometimes I feel like when I'm writing, my lines do a lot of that as well.
It's beautiful work. Thank you so much, Natalie.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Natalie Diaz reads tonight, 7:30 Caldwell Hall Lounge, NC State University, the new collection, When My Brother Was an Aztec. That's our program today. Thanks for listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.